Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Josh Rogers, and this is The Exchange. Healthcare dominated New Hampshire headlines again this week. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs launched an investigation into allegations of substandard care at the Manchester VA Medical Center, while Republican attempts to repeal and replace Obamacare fizzled in the U.S. Senate. Here in Concord, Governor Sununu signed marijuana decriminalization into law, and in Dover he announced new efforts to fight the opioid crisis with state drug czar David Mara. In Manchester, Mayor Ted Gatz has filed a defamation lawsuit over allegations of a cover-up in the West High School sexual assault case, just as he ramps up his campaign for re-election. Meanwhile, the city debates whether to adopt a new flag to complement its official seal. All of this while a herd of bison were on the move, at least temporarily, in Guilford. Today on The Exchange, it's our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Let's hear from you. You can call into The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. And I have two great reporters joining me in studio for the weekly news roundup this morning. Gary Reno. He's author of Distant Dome, a Manchester Inklink and in-depth NHOR.org series on the New Hampshire State House. He previously worked as a reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader. And Gary, so much for retiring. It's great to have you back on the roundup.
Well, thanks, Dean.
And we have Trent Spinner. He's executive editor of the Manchester Union Leader. And Trent, it's always good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
There were indeed a lot of healthcare headlines in the news this week, so let's start with a couple of the big ones. We learned this week that the Department of Veterans Affairs is investigating allegations of substandard care at the Manchester VA. And this was brought on in part by a Boston Globe spotlight piece citing whistleblowers. Let's talk a little bit about the allegations. And in particular, there seems to be some disagreement about when these issues were first brought to light. And Trent, let me turn to you first.
So just to recap what happened, on Sunday, the Boston Globe ran a front page story detailing some allegations from whistleblowers saying that, for example, in one of the operating rooms, there were flies that had infested the facility and that the facility had spent tens of thousands of dollars to try and fix this problem, but couldn't do it. And it really came to light when there was a veteran who was in surgery and was looking up at the ceiling as he was laying on the bed and pointed to one of the nurses and said, "Hey, is there supposed to be a fly in here right now?" And the nurse said, "No, of course not," and they had to move it. And there were other issues. One of the doctors who did a pretty specific type of surgery on injured spinal cords was seeing these instances of vets who had been treated there who were suffering from conditions that he said that only existed in third world countries that just shouldn't be happening in the United States. And so for background, this is the Boston Globe story. It was not the first time that officials knew something was wrong. These whistleblowers had met with Senator Shaheen and Representative Custer in the past and brought their some of these allegations to light. Both of those offices forwarded information to the VA, and the VA said, "We're going to investigate. We're going to kind of look into this." But it wasn't until that story came out on Sunday that immediate changes were made.
In the wake of the Boston Globe story, Al Montoya, who's the director of the White River Junction VA, was appointed interim director, and the Exchange asked him for his response to the Globe report. Let's take a listen.
I would direct you to Secretary Shulkin's statement, which he released on Sunday, which, you know, certainly he ordered a top-to-bottom review of the Manchester VA Medical Center, which is currently underway. I will tell you that this week, actually on Monday, we had two groups come to the facility already, the Office of the Medical Inspector, as well as the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. And those are just two of the groups that are coming in. There are certainly more to come in the near future, as well as weeks after that.
That's Al Montoya, director of the White River Junction VA. He was appointed interim director at the Manchester VA. And Gary, let me turn to you. We learned that Senator Shaheen has sent a letter about a year ago, and that the VA secretary, the federal secretary, David Shulkin, had been copied on that letter. And there's some he suggested that he hadn't. This was the first he was hearing about it. Say a little bit about the controversy here.
I mean, Senator Shaheen said this shouldn't be an issue. I mean, this should have been handled long ago. I sent him a letter. He shot back that basically there wasn't enough information in there to do anything about it. And she said that's, you know, basically not true. So it's been back and forth, back and forth. It's not as though this facility has been spotless. I mean, it has a 4-star rating, which I suppose
it's a pretty good rating. I was under the impression that it was fairly well viewed.
Well viewed, but I mean, in the past, it was one of those. It was very took a very long time to see veterans. It has some issues in the past. It also have come to light. So it's a facility that's sort of been on the brink, back and forth. And anybody who's been in the congressional delegation in New Hampshire has always been pretty involved in the aspects of this. It's a facility that lost some key components that require veterans in New Hampshire to go to Boston or to White River Junction to get particular services. So it's not as though this is like the first time something like this has happened.
It's the weekly New Hampshire Roundup on the Exchange. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, and I'll get it in the studio. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Trent, we know that the current director and chief of staff were both removed. Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter has called for a Veterans Affairs subcommittee field meeting. How do you see this evolving going forward?
I think it's going to become very political. And just one thing to note to Gary's previous point, the day that this story came out and then with all the follow-up coverage in the New Hampshire media, I can tell you that on Monday morning, we were swamped with phone calls from veterans who go to this center, this VA center in Manchester, who said that they have received nothing but the best health care that they could have ever hoped for.
Yeah. Concord Monitor had a piece that talked to a lot of people who had positive experiences as well.
Right. And so we went, I mean, we were there Monday morning. One of our political reporters, Dave Solomon, was there Monday morning, and he talked to a number of people who were headed into the center, and people who were telling stories about how they had suffered from an IED attack, people who had been going for 20 years, and they had no complaints about the facility. And so we went back to some of the people who were complaining to say, well, wait a second, all of these people, I mean, our phone lines were ringing off the hook. Where's the disconnect here? And what some of the whistleblowers said was that sometimes veterans don't understand that the care they're getting from the VA isn't up to par with what they could be getting somewhere else. So I think, to answer your question, I think we're going to see this become very political. I think that
congressional hearings.
I think there will
so
be
forth.
Yes. I think that Shulkin will be pressured into coming. The VA secretary will be pressured into coming up to Manchester to hear from people who have complaints. I would imagine that that's going to receive a lot of coverage. And then I think that the entire delegation and the governor will be really pushing him to make sure that some of these problems are solved.
And Gary, to make matters worse, we woke up the other day to learn that a major pipe had burst and something like multiple floors were flooded. And now people have to be directed to other places.
Other places, right. I mean, pipe, basically the top three floors were damaged extensively that required them to go out and find other places to send patients.
Because, something like 240 appointments or
something like that.
And I read that it's going to be 2 to 4 weeks before that is fixed. I want to mention that The Exchange did an entire show on this issue just yesterday. And so you can hear a lot more on the topic by checking out the podcast at nhpr.org. And we will be following this on the weekly news roundup for many weeks to come. Another big story this week, a national story with implications for New Hampshire, was the Republican attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare. It failed in the U.S. Senate. Let's take a listen to Senator Hassan talking about the danger of now moving on to a straight repeal of Obamacare.
Democrats are really eager to sit down with our Republican colleagues, get back to regular order, and really talk about how we move forward to improve the Affordable Care Act, fix what isn't working well, and build on the health care system we have so that all Americans have access to affordable health insurance.
That is Senator Hassan speaking on MSNBC Tuesday about the dangers of a straight repeal of Obamacare. And Gary, let me turn to you. It doesn't sound like this is necessarily going to happen, although Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wants to get people on the record in terms of Republicans of where they are on this. Mm-hmm. Your sense of kind of the implications for New Hampshire in terms of insurance exchanges, Medicaid, et cetera.
Well, the Medicaid, particularly Medicaid expansion, we got 50,000 people in New Hampshire who are on the expansion program. So, I mean, those people are the ones that are most at risk under any kind of changes that have been talked about. But Medicaid itself, I mean, that's over 120,000 people in New Hampshire. And there's some significant reductions in Medicaid spending over the years in these bills. The repeal itself, I mean, that would just do away with the whole exchanges that have been set up here, and they're not five people there anymore. They're three, but they're still fairly robust compared to a lot of other states. All of that would be at risk if you just repealed the whole thing.
Yeah, and Trent, Governor Sununu has been increasingly outspoken about the danger of about a $1.5 billion gap in Medicaid money over 10 years. So where is he on all of this?
We have to remember the political context of all of this. If you look at public polling in New Hampshire, the number one issue people are talking about or people concerned about is the opioid epidemic,
yes.
And I think that almost everyone you talk to on both sides of the aisle will say that Medicaid expansion is helping to curtail or at least treat people who are struggling with substance misuse disorders. And so he is kind of in a difficult spot. I think that he needs to watch out for both, you know, what the party wants to do, what the president wants to do. But he also needs to keep in mind what you know, how Medicaid expansion is helping New Hampshire. So he's in a difficult spot. And I think that. You know, I think the implication for that is that he is going to have to really take a look at, you know, what the solution might be, and what is going to happen in Washington, and to try and wrangle something that works for New Hampshire.
And Gary, Governor Sununu was in Dover this week with state drug czar David Mara, and talked about the need for recruiting businesses that can be certified as recovery friendly. So he's got, and there's some other talk about converting the Sununu Youth Center. He's got some other items lined up as well on this issue.
Well, the money's in the budget to convert the Sununu Youth Center to it.
So it's already in there.
In there, so that should be a done deal. But what he was talking about is certifying businesses as recovery friendly. People go into the recovery programs and treatment programs, and they come out and they have a hard time finding work. And the whole idea here is to find a nice, stable work environment that's supportive of them so that they can succeed in their recovery and end up staying straight for the rest of their lives. It's one of many things that have been tried here, one of the many things that they want to try. This whole issue with the Sununu Youth Center, which a large part of it's been sitting empty pretty much.
Yeah, they want to convert like half of it to do addiction, inpatient and addiction services.
For young people, essentially.
Yeah. Trent, your any other thoughts here about these other opioid-related proposals or programs that are being implemented?
You know, I think we're about, you know, 2 or 3 years into since this has become a very urgent crisis in the state. And I think we've seen everyone from government officials to business leaders to nonprofit leaders really trying to figure out the best way to solve this. And I think if you look at the numbers, we get the numbers, for example, from the Manchester Safe Stations every week. The number of people in the state who are still suffering and dying has not significantly decreased. And there has been a boatload of money and effort and time spent on finding solutions. So I think we still have a long way to go here.
It's going to take some time for this to play out, but it's got tremendous visibility that it once did not have. Governor Sununu also signed a marijuana decriminalization into law. This is an issue that we've typically only talked about in terms of medical marijuana, but now we're going to have decrim for a 3/4 ounce. You'll just pay a fine rather than risk jail time. Let's listen to Matt Simon with the Pro Decriminalization Marijuana Policy Project talk about why this change is long overdue.
People won't have to worry about being hauled into court, won't have to worry about getting a criminal record simply for possessing marijuana. From a broader public policy perspective, the criminal justice system will be less burdened by marijuana possession arrests.
That is Matt Simon with the Pro Decriminalization Marijuana Policy Project. And Gary, this has indeed been a long time in coming. You've covered this issue probably for at least a decade.
Oh, it seems like it.
what was different this time in the state legislature?
What's different this time is a lot of people sat down who traditionally have opposed it, the Police Chiefs Association, people like New Futures, and everybody sort of sat down and say, what could we live with? And they sort of came up with a program that while it would decriminalize, and the state will join the rest of New England, we might add, in decriminalizing marijuana, but adding other things like the fines will go to treatment programs, having an at-risk assessment of youth arrested for marijuana possession. Things like that, that people could all of a sudden buy into that weren't in there before. And so the Senate has always been the problem in the last 5 or 6 years. It goes right through the House and it dies in the Senate where the state police, Police Chiefs Association has been very influential.
Yeah.
And this time they finally got something that everybody could agree with.
Well, Trent, we got about a minute, but I'm interested in your thoughts.
You know, the Senate Majority Leader, Jeb Bradley, really helped to broker this deal. And I was reading some of his remarks, and he said, you know, this project, this idea has been around for a long time. But what I'd like to see is that, you know, some young kid who maybe gets caught with marijuana, that this isn't their first and last strike, that they have an opportunity to come back and get some treatment. And you know, get a job. And so I think that kind of sentiment is what led both the Republican controlled Senate, which had been, as Gary mentioned, had been against this for a long time, and the governor to sign this into law.
Well, and we know that the governor also signed a bill to study legalization down the road, but we also know that some folks are not happy with the commission. They think it excludes pro-legalization groups. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. We'll be back in a moment.
The creative process isn't always easy, but getting distracted can be.
It feels like you're writing, but it's the equivalent of empty calories.
If you're looking, I have to write 500 words a day, it's not on Twitter. The 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, your source for the productive habits we can all benefit from, along with the guilty pleasures we can all relate to. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis, in for Josh Rogers. Today on The Exchange, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup, and we want to hear from you at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. I have two guests in studio with me today. Trent Spinner is executive director for the Union Leader and the New Hampshire Sunday News. Gary Reno is author of Distant Dome, a Manchester Inklink an in-depth.org series on the New Hampshire State House. He used to be a reporter for the Union Leader as well. And let's shift gears now and talk a bit about some of the big political headlines in the news this week. And Secretary of State Gardner made his way down to D.C. for the first official meeting of the Commission on Voting Integrity. This is something we've talked about a lot on the News Roundup. I've had quite a bit to say on it myself on other Fridays. But let's listen to what he had to say about the Commission.
I think that I'd like to have people wait until this commission has a chance to get going. We just had the first face-to-face meeting, and it's all going to be an open process.
That's Secretary of State Bill Gardner talking about giving the Election Integrity Commission a chance. And Trent, how likely is that to happen?
I think that this was political from the moment it was announced. But you have to consider Bill Gardner's position here. Bill Gardner has spent his entire life making sure that elections in New Hampshire are fair, that they're transparent. He has presided over, I think it was 500 elections. And I think he was deeply concerned to see all of the disparaging remarks made by members of the public, the president, about about elections, especially this last cycle. And so I think he's deep, you know, if you consider that he's spent his whole life trying to make sure that these elections are fair and that a majority of people say that they're concerned that there might be some issue with elections, I think it really helps understand where he's coming from personally. I think he, you know, he's a lifelong Democrat. He's been reelected by members from both parties. But I think the Democratic Party, members of the Democratic Party have really given him a tough time about taking part in this election. But I don't think he cares about the politics of it. I think he's really, truly concerned about what people think of our elections.
And Gary, Trent mentioned Secretary Gardner is a lifelong Democrat, but he has supported some regulations and rules on voting, like the ID rules that we typically associate with Republicans in the state.
I mean, Democrats were particularly upset with him this last term in the Senate when he this last session when he supported an ID voting bill that the Senate put out, which basically put a lot of restrictions that weren't there before, have a waiting period and things like that. And he has supported other things. He was supportive of photo ID before before a lot of people, Democrats were very upset with that when he did that too. But he has always been, as Trent said, very conscious of making sure that people know that elections are fair and that the results are correct. And that drives everything that Bill Gardner does. And he does upset people sometimes, but that's the way he always has been. He's been as friendly with Democrats and Republicans alike. And those people who know him very well respect him and are very happy to see that he's in that position. And they think that he does a great job of making sure the elections are held to the best possible standards.
And Trent, as Gary says, Gardner has been very genuine about his concerns over why voters express a lack of confidence in the system. Others have pointed to statements that we heard again just at the meeting. President Trump, in addressing the meeting on Wednesday, said that states that don't comply with the data request are hiding something. And I think he even said they always are hiding something. And then we had Chris Kobach, the vice chair, say we may never know whether Hillary Clinton really won the popular vote. And also, in essence, sort of indirectly calling into question Trump's electoral victory, because he says if lots of votes are disqualified, we don't know who they voted for. So why do you think that? Do you think he's unaware of the politics, or do you just think he thinks that they can kind of work around that?
I think Bill Gardner doesn't care about the politics.
He just doesn't care.
Okay. He just doesn't care. And, you know, that's Bill Gardner's style. He doesn't care about – he has a job to do. And his job is to make sure the New Hampshire primary is the first in the nation, that the elections are fair and transparent. And he doesn't care about the politics, whether those are Republican politics, Democratic politics. He's just going to do his job. And I think that's why he has done this job for so long. I think it's truly a deep passion for him. This isn't like a job that he goes to. This is his lifelong passion. So I don't think maybe he doesn't understand all the politics, but I don't know if any of us really understand all the politics and what the commission's real what's really even happening with this commission. I think if you asked Democrats and Republicans, they both have different answers. So I'm sure that he's aware that this is a very political – it's a difficult political football, but I just don't think he cares.
Mm-hmm. Garrett?
I mean, I think if somebody said to him, which, you know, what Trump said after the election about people bussing in from out of state here to vote in New Hampshire, which was repeated by Chris Sununu back in the fall, he would be very upset with that. Because he believes that doesn't happen here. Is he saying that there's no fraud? No, he's saying there's some, you know, there's a little here and there probably, but nothing of any consequence, nothing that's really been proven of any large scale numbers at all. But, you know, he's just trying his best to make sure that people believe the results of the elections.
Well, we're still waiting for some lawsuits at the federal level to be worked out on the data submission aspect. And there was a suit here in New Hampshire brought by members of the state legislature, both Republican and Democrat, and the ACLU. That was put on hold pending what happens at the federal level. So we'll continue to see whether the commission gets beyond this initial meeting. Also, in political headlines this week, we have a couple of special elections for the state legislature on the radar. We just had one here in Concord for state rep. Democratic Chris Schultz got 78% of the vote over Republican Michael Feely, sort of solidifying Democratic control of the city. Turnout was about 13%. We now turn next week to this race for the District 16 Senate seat. This is the 25th, I believe. Trent, this is turning into be a pretty interesting state Senate race.
Yes, it is. It is turning into an interesting Senate race. We are looking at a Republican who has served in the Senate before and a Democrat who is a Manchester alderman. And there's been a lot of look. It's the middle of the summer. There are two parties with a decent amount of money in New Hampshire, and both of these candidates have raised six-figure dollar amounts for these for this race. And so, with nothing else really going on the election side of things, there's a lot of attention on this race. I think we've seen it already kind of turn a little ugly. I don't know if you want to get into the comments about sanctuary cities.
You can mention that this is comments by the Democratic candidate, Kevin Kavanaugh.
So Kavanaugh says, is asked a couple different ways. You know, he says he, and I want to make sure I get it right here, but he says that he supports, he wants illegal immigrants to be able to call the police, but not be taken away. And Republicans pounced on some of those comments. I think in this race, it'll really be a question of turnout to see how many people show up. Booten has won this race before, but the last time this election was held, the Democrat won. So I think we'll see.
Gary, I'm curious. You've studied the legislature for many, many years. Is this going to make a difference in terms of the balance of power in terms of practical legislative agenda?
Well, I think the difference between 1410 and 59 really is significant, because when you get to 59, you're just one vote away from being veto proof. And so that is different. And Republicans haven't had that kind of majority for a while. In that respect, it's interesting. And, I mean, it's an interesting district because it largely is Republican. But it's not a particularly conservative district.
Yeah, this is, just for listeners, this is Bow, Hooksett, Candia, Dunbarton, and part of Manchester.
First, the northern three wards of Manchester. Yeah. And this is kind of interesting this time because you have the Libertarian in the—
This is Jason Dubrow.
Jason Dubrow in a race. And David Booten is not always the most popular guy among conservative Republicans. He's been a moderate Republican.
Well, interestingly enough, Trent, we saw the Concord Monitor endorse David Booten precisely on this issue of bipartisanship.
Which was shocking. And I think the Republican
Party— It was surprising
Party,
to people, I think, yes, who were regular readers of the Monitor.
Yes. And I think the Republican Party was very happy about that.
So we're going to continue to monitor that race. It's high visibility. We've had Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland and presidential candidate, in for the Democrats. Governor Sununu and former Senator Ayotte cutting ads for the Republican. We'll see what happens next week. I want to turn to Manchester and, Trent, ask you about Mayor Ted Gatsis and his defamation suit on the Manchester West sexual assault case. What's going on there?
So just to recap for listeners, there was a sexual assault more than 2 years ago at West High School. A student there was found guilty of assaulting another student in a hallway. Meanwhile, a school resource officer was nearby. School officials knew that this hallway was a problem, but they didn't really do much about it. And when this student was arrested almost 2 years ago, an email went out from a school official saying, Hey, there was a sexual assault at West today. We can't release names. We can't release much information. But I just wanted to let the board know. And for 2 years, nothing else happened. There was no public announcement. Students, teachers, parents were never informed about the sexual assault on campus. And it wasn't until union leader reporter Mark Hayward found out about this case 2 years later and asked the question, hey, why didn't anybody say anything? He asked the police chief. He asked the superintendent of schools. He asked the mayor. And he asked the county attorney, whose job is it to notify parents that somebody was raped on campus? And everyone kind of pointed the finger at everyone else. And so it immediately became another political football. And what's happened here is two opponents of two people who don't really like Ted Gatzis. One was the co-chair of his opponent's campaign in 2015. And the other is a kind of a Manchester politics gadfly. They circulated some information basically accusing the mayor of covering up this.
Yeah, it was sort of like a 4-point, and they issued kind of a 4-point statement about the ways in which he had tried to cover this up.
Exactly. And so what this lawsuit argues is that not only is the information false, but that it was malicious, that they were purposefully trying to harm the mayor with lies. Because, you know, as all of us know from our media law training, that it's pretty difficult to libel or slander a public official, especially the mayor of a city.
It's a high threshold.
It's a very high threshold. But what the mayor's arguing here is that that threshold was met because they had actual malice, that they were actually trying to harm the mayor by creating a false story. The mayor, of course, has argued all along that he either didn't know about it or that he didn't know all the facts involving. And we've had a lot of reporting about exactly who knew what and when and who said what. So it'll be an interesting case to watch because, you know, with Gatzis filing this lawsuit, it's going to open up a lot of stuff as part of the discovery process,
right,
including campaign memos, private communications that he had, stuff that we wouldn't be able to get through the right to know law, even though we've asked for a lot of stuff. So it'll be an interesting case to watch.
And as we know, he is running for re-election. So I'm sure some people believe he had to push back against the allegations. This is the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. I'm Dean Spiliotis in for Josh Rogers. Today, it's the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. I have two reporters with me for the remainder of the show, Gary Reno, who writes Distant Dome, a series on the New Hampshire State House. You can find that at indepthnh.org. He also wrote previously for the Union Leader, and Trent Spinner, who's executive editor for the Union Leader and the New Hampshire Sunday News. And let me turn to you, Gary. St. Paul's School in Concord was back in the news this week. We had learned recently that the state attorney general has launched an investigation into sexual abuse at the elite boarding school. The administration spoke out this week about a new game of sexual conquest that was rumored to be taking place and also involving a fake crown.
Yes, they the head of the school sent a letter around basically explaining why they removed a picture from the yearbook, which had a picture of a crown in it. And this seems to be the latest problem that the school is facing in terms of these issues about sexual conquest and games between students. He also lamented the fact that the attorney general was involved in investigating them and reiterated the fact that the school had done its own investigation and found that the number of faculty of staff members had been acting inappropriately. But it just seems as though that this has like been one after the other. Some people involved in the earlier issues again criticized the school and saying they're really not stepping up to the plate and addressing these issues of sexual conquest, et cetera.
But let's listen to Democratic Representative Deborah Altshuler talking about legislation that would lift the statute of limitations on pursuing abusers.
we will be bringing forward legislation that will lift the statute of limitations so that survivors are able to receive justice. There should not be an expiration date on justice, because we know that it is really hard for survivors to come forward on a judicial timeline.
That is Deborah Atchiller, Democratic representative, talking on The Exchange about abuse at private schools. Currently, child victims of sexual abuse have until their 30th birthday to file civil suits and until their 40th birthday to file criminal suits. She's talking about introducing legislation to change that. Trent, your thoughts? It sounds like this week the administration there said there was no evidence of an actual Crown game, but that they had disciplined several students in relation to it.
Yes, they disciplined five students. There's a part of the code of conduct says that you can't record any of your sexual interactions with other students, and so some of these students were penalized. They were through the school judicial system, with the legislation about statute of limitations, I think that'll be interesting to watch. I think that, you know, if you talk to prosecutors, there's certainly a challenge as these cases get older in finding evidence, physical evidence, finding people who are willing to testify. And so it'll be an interesting thing to watch in Concord.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will continue to monitor that as it develops through the Attorney General's office and elsewhere. Trent, let me turn to you for an interesting story that caught my eye, and it seems to be ongoing. Manchester is having a debate about whether to adopt a flag. It sounds like it's kind of a branding exercise to complement the city's official seal. Apparently, people are going to get to vote on this in November, but the aldermen have a say as well.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing happening in Manchester. So they, for about a year now, there's been discussion about whether right now the Manchester City flag is basically the seal, which is a very traditional. If you know, when you think of what a city seal looks like, Manchester's is very traditional. And so there are three proposals for new flags. The city had a flag contest. They got almost 300 entries. And with the help of the Manchester Historic Association, the Manchester Chamber of Commerce, the Manchester Arts Commission, the New Hampshire Institute of Art, they picked three finalists. And these are very, maybe it's just my opinion, but I think these are very modern looking flags. And so what Alderman said was they didn't want to have to make the decision. So they voted to allow voters in November during the next city election. They said, why don't we let the voters decide which should be the new city flag, with a little caveat, which is that the aldermen reserve the right to overrule the voters if they didn't like what was.
Are they required to pick a flag, or they can just decide no flag at all? I mean, if the aldermen don't like the choice of the voters, can they say we prefer this other flag, or can they just say, hey, we're not going to have
a flag?
Yes,
they can say whatever they want. Yes. Yes, this is a non-binding vote.
Oh, okay.
It's basically asking for the opinion of the people who show up to vote in the next mayor's race.
Gary, what do you think about this? It's interesting.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, you kind of wonder, you go through this whole process, and then at the last minute you have the aldermen and the mayor stepping in and saying, well, maybe, maybe not. You know, I mean, you sort of, I think I can imagine a lot of people aren't being too happy about that.
Well, and Joyce Craig, the Democrat, who's going to may very well be the Democratic candidate for mayor, has said, let the people decide. So she's already weighing in on this.
Right. Yeah. And, if you are interested, if you live in Manchester and you're interested to see what the options are, you can check them out at our website, unionleader.com. We've got all three and the current city seal now. So you can make up your mind before you have to go in and vote.
Yeah. Well, we will see what people choose in November. And perhaps, as we've just seen in Concord, there are now Concord flags flying over the renovated Main Street with the Concord coach on the flags alternating with American flags. So perhaps Manchester is headed in that direction. On a more serious note, we learned on Wednesday that Arizona Senator John McCain is fighting an aggressive form of brain cancer. He is synonymous with the modern New Hampshire primary. I had the opportunity to speak with him a number of times in 2000 and again in 2008. I got to do a sit-down interview with him and Lindsey Graham when they did their tour together during the last primary. I'm interested to hear both of your thoughts on Senator McCain. We know he's a fighter, but we also know this is a very aggressive type of cancer. It's the same one that Ted Kennedy had diagnosed in May of 2008. Passed in August of 2009. So let me start with you, Gary.
Well, I can remember back in the 2000 election. I mean, everybody was giving the election to George Bush. They was anointing him. And John McCain came to New Hampshire, and he just worked and worked and worked and held town meeting after town meeting after town meeting. I was lucky enough to be one of the people who was sitting in the back of the bus with him for a couple of times and just sitting there and chatting with reporters.
Straight Talk Express.
Straight Talk Express. And he just blew to be President Bush right out of the water. I mean, he just connected with people in a big way. And that's what always kind of impressed me about him, was the fact that he had a way of connecting with people in a very meaningful way. 8 years later, when he was, I remember a debate in at St. Anselm's, when they had a whole, and there were probably 10 or 12 Republican candidates. And this woman who worked at the college had lost her brother in Iraq. And as she was talking, he got up and he started walking toward her and he started engaging her. And I mean, that was the sort of guy he was. He was very much involved in the people that he was dealing with in their lives. And you sensed that there was a genuine person here. And I think that's what got him as far as he did.
Yeah, Trent, you know, he really is sort of the archetype for the modern town hall intensive strategy of winning the primary.
That's right. I remember covering in 2008, covering his 100th town hall, and it was at the Peterborough Town Hall, and it was a sight. But one of my favorite memories, and I think kind of a really telling story about his personality, is it was also on the Straight Talk Express. I was in the back with him and Cindy, a couple of other reporters, some who are now they were like local reporters, and they're now national folks, but. We were pulling off of a 393, getting onto Route 106 to go to the NASCAR race. John McCain was supposed to fly the flag at the NASCAR race. And we pull onto Route 106, and traffic is absolutely jammed. And so he has Secret Service protection. They are really concerned about the security issue of the Straight Talk Express just sitting in traffic. So they get out, and they are now forming a perimeter, human perimeter, around the bus. And they're running alongside as the Straight Talk Express was driving up the side of the road. And John McCain, the only thing he was upset about, not being late, nothing, not. He was upset that he couldn't be out there running with the Secret Service agents.
He liked to be part of the action. I know he will be in everyone's thoughts and prayers going forward, and we'll continue to check in to see how he's doing. On a happier news, the bison are back in their farm. My thanks to Trent and Gary. We are out of time. This has been the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.